Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello, and thanks very much for tuning into this week's episode of The Ball Bags. Episode 11, Season 3, so the penultimate episode, or basically the second last episode before Christmas. Delighted to be joined by the Chief. How are you, sir?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. Can't complain. A fantastic weekend of sport and another one to look forward to. Rocky sends his apologies and sent through his notes. We'll discuss them. And the Tash is unavailable this week, so look, we'll hope to get the full crew in for the final episode next week, but we will push on. So last week's player of the week from Rocky was Jake Elliott, Philadelphia Eagles goal kicker. Reason he probably selected him is Jake Elliott had a 59-yard kick to send the game to overtime. Gonads of steel, I think, is the common expression. Chief, who is your player of the week and why?
Yeah, so my player of the week was Cobby Manu or Mainoo for Man United in their win at Goodison Park. He just thought very mature performance for such a young player. Thought he played quite well.
Yeah, and to be fair, the Sky Sports pundits did say that he would have got man of the match if not for Garnacho. Basically got man of the match.
The wonder goal, yeah.
which, to be fair, and he came on, obviously we're recording on Thursday night, he came on last night against Galatasaray, and the game was 3-3 when he came on, and he looked just as composed in that cacophony of sound and
in a hostile environment. Energy. He looked assured of himself when he came on. He's my player of the week.
I suppose three very biased player of the week. If Rocky hadn't gone for Jake Elliott, I would have gone for Jake Elliott maybe. But mine this week is Kai Havertz. The reason I've gone with him is obviously he struggled during his open tenure at Arsenal. He came off probably a poor year at Chelsea, but his last four games, club and country, he has scored thrice. I'm obviously including last night's victory over Lens, injury time winner against Brentford, and then he didn't score against Austria, but they played Turkey, and he played an unfamiliar position of left back and scored in that game. So I just think potentially maybe tide is starting to turn for Kai. If he is, it'll be kind of a bit of a wonder story, given how poor he's looked in the opening stanza. But that was my player of the week.
I'm going to take a Roy Keane quote and say that's his job to score,
which is fair enough.
He hasn't been doing it, and he's maybe finding a bit of form. It'd be interesting to see how he goes at the weekend. Can he continue it? Maybe it is the turning of a tide for him.
Absolutely. If we had to pick one, who is it and why?
As you said, that it's very biased across the board. Not being an Eagles fan, I'll have to give it to Jake Elliott, though. For his fair gonads of steel with that field goal.
We can make a debate, I suppose, that it was a moment as opposed to a performance, but I'm not going to argue too bad being an Eagles fan myself.
Well, he had to kick others up to that point as well, so, but it was a very clutch moment.
Very true, you know. Very true. Yeah, we're going to kick into agree to disagree. We'll kick off with Rocky's point and we'll debate it ourselves. I'll read it out. Rocky's point as sent through We've seen some very quick rebuild reloads over the last few years. Example, Philadelphia, Seattle. Seattle is debatable given performance this season. Is David Tepper, owner of the Carolina Panthers, to blame for the prolonged rebuild of his team?
I definitely think he has a lot of blame on his shoulders. When you look at how much the Bears absolutely fleeced them to give up the number one spot in the last draft, the Bears could potentially have a lot of pieces, key pieces over the next draft, next two drafts, as a result of this, and the Panthers are going to suffer for 3-4 drafts maybe. Which, yeah, I think that falls on the owner. Like the GM, he can take some blame, but ultimately it's the owner that's pulling the strings.
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at the GM, what decision did he really get wrong? He got the decision of drafting
Bryce Young
over CJ Stroud, which, look, in hindsight, looks wrong. But at the time, you're talking about an Alabama quarterback versus an Ohio State quarterback. And the money, I know there's kind of been probably an equal share of flops as there has been
it's
success stories from Alabama. Like, you look at Tua, Jalen Hurts, obviously, who was Alabama, ended up in Oklahoma. And then you look at, say, versus a Mac Jones. But Ohio State traditionally has fantastic quarterbacks that maybe don't have the same record in the pro game. Jury's obviously still out on Justin Fields, but with a potential number one draft pick, his time could be up in Chicago anyway, as they could maybe look to
move on from him.
Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I think a separate issue with Fields. I think he's showing signs so that possibly there is going to be another year in him. And then with the draft collateral that they have, they could move on him in another year's time, and potentially still be high up to in the 2025 draft if there's someone good coming through. But I think on Rocky's point, a lot of blame there on Tepper. Probably trying to think other, franchises. If you go across different sports, the Chicago Bulls are notorious for, it looks like they get some good pieces together, and now it's it's looking really bad. Like, they suffered a big defeat to Boston the other night in the in-season tournament. Put that, and I think Boston had to win by 23. They won by 27 to get through to the knockout stages and stuff. Seems to be a bit of disharmony there as well, with the likes of LaVine, who I really like as a player, but they maxed out his contract, and it's whether they can get some value for him.
It is an interesting topic, though, because, and I'll tell you why, because my kind of personal stance on this is successful organizations, wherever you look, they're aggressive.
Yeah.
So they don't sit in the laurels. They're happy to make a mistake, but correct it quickly. And what you could say about Carolina is they kind of have been that in recent years. Like, they'll fire a coach very quickly. They'll move off. They've moved off some huge pieces. They moved off Christian McCaffrey. They brought in new players. I don't know how many different quarterbacks we've seen under center in Carolina since, say, that side that Cam Newton took to a Super Bowl. But they're getting it wrong consistently.
Yeah.
The example for me of a good organization, of a good kind of proof in the pudding is like Philadelphia. And I know it's very biased, but Doug Peterson was involved winning the Super Bowl. Carson Wentz was kind of, he obviously didn't play in the winning Super Bowl, but he was an MVP that season, basically, bar the ACL injury. They moved off boat very quick. They got lambasted for the deal they took off Indianapolis to trade Carson Wentz to Indy. And proof is in the pudding, they actually won that deal. They brought in new pieces. And they made the move, the jump on Jalen very quick. And I know he's probably not, like, stylistically and stats-wise, the best quarterback in the competition. But he just seems like a great culture guy. And he's, his tangibles are sizable enough that he's a starter. But it's his intangibles that are just, they're off the charts. And that's kind of the difference for me anyway, as a Philadelphia fan, as biased as I may be.
Yeah, I think that's the Eagles organization is probably one of the best examples of not resting on your laurels. And like, regardless of winning the Super Bowl, it's like, okay, we see an opportunity here, we're going to move the piece around. And but for coming up against the Mahomes led Chiefs, would have had a Super Bowl last year.
I suppose the reason why the Eagles are such a good example is, look, maybe they won't win a second Super Bowl, but they didn't win Super Bowls for so long that it can all change with the right pieces in the back office.
Yeah.
Very quickly. Yeah. It's not saying that he is the Messiah, but, and again, biased, but when you look at what Arsenal have done in the last few years under Kroenke, who may very well be one of the best owners in the world of sports. Obviously, yeah. He owns the Rams, got a Super Bowl there. He owns the Nuggets, won the NBA championship last year. Owns the, I think he's a side that won the NHL quite recently as well.
The LA Kings? Is he part owner of that?
I have a feeling it's Denver based.
Avalanche. Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah. I think that's the side he owns. Mm. But I think we were looking at like the best period in sports ownership.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Avalanche won the 2002 Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
He's owner there. Had Arsenal not slipped up, that's a case of like in 24 months, he's won a Super Bowl and then a Stanley Cup, Larry O'Brien and a Premier League title.
Yeah, that's...
Like, in 24 months, exceptional.
Yeah, it is. It's serious. I just apologise. I seem to have a frog in my throat this evening. I just can't quite shake it. But yeah, that's... And to be honest, like, Arsenal are probably looking best to rival City this year. So it could be another successful year for Mr. Kroenke and his investments. Obviously too early to see how the Nuggets are going to go again and stuff, but you know, it's
but all of those sides had kind of been not whipping boys, but the clock did go a while back. But just an interesting point, like the Rams in St. Louis, after the greatest show on turf, which I think was like 2001, they were kind of very meh.
Mm.
And they moved to LA. They did get to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff. But again, they weren't prepared to sit on the laurels with him. They moved off him. And Denver Nuggets were kind of in a similar boat. They were kind of regular season champions, never really
playoff contenders. Yeah.
And then, like, it is someone who maybe needs to be studied in terms of sports ownership. The fact that we've so many examples of him changing
the fortunes of organizations and teams,
without Middle Eastern money.
Yeah.
But look, we digress. Yeah, I think happy to move on to your point, Chief.
Yeah. So, having won three on the bounce in the Premier League since the Manchester Derby, has Erik ten Hag done enough to ease pressure on himself, or will an early Champions League exit be the final nail in his coffin? And obviously, the capitulation in Turkey last night, 2-1, 2-0 up, 3-1 up, and then they ended up 3-3 with very obvious errors from Onana for all three goals. Like the annoying point or part is the three games after the City defeat were three clean sheets in the Premier League. I know they conceded a lot in Champions League and the League Cup, the loss to Newcastle as well. I think it was 3-0 in that one. But do we feel there's the pressure is just mounting, and this Champions League, possible Champions League exit, is going to finish him?
I don't think he's a lot of time left. I don't think he's a lot of good grace. I don't know if the Champions League exit is going to be the final nail in the coffin. I think it's a combination of a few things. It's like I don't generally know who can come in and stay the ship at United. I think he's like, it's just such a pressure environment, and I know we've talked about this before. It's like the ghosts of kind of the ghosts that hang around in punditry. So Ferdinand on TNT Sports,
Scholes, even Roy Keane and Scholes. Gary Neville, like,
exactly. I was just getting to them. Like, it just, and then even the only other pundit seems to be like our Micah Richards, who's a former City man, who's obviously going to have nothing fantastic to say about United, and Jamie Carragher, who's a Liverpool player, again probably not going to have anything nice to say about United. I think the pressure in United, in Old Trafford, it's such a mess. The best thing that could have happened to United was that kind of clean slate, if you want, like if the new ownership group had taken over, which I don't fully know where that stands right now.
No, that's very messy sort of situation. Jim Radcliffe is, I think, becoming a stakeholder, all right, but it's, I think, for them to move forward as a whole club, it needed to be new ownership. Like, the Glazers out movement needs to be bigger and louder. You know, like, talk about the total opposite of Kroenke. Okay, they won the Super Bowl with Tampa, when Tom Brady came in. But it's just all United is to them is it's a money making machine. They're not servicing any of the debt, and they're just milking the profits, and you know, but yeah, he probably will lose his job either before Christmas, or I wouldn't say much long after, if results go bad. But who comes in is a massive, massive issue. It's like, who do you do you go for someone like Michael Carrick, just give him the job? Or do you know, like, who's big out there that can come in and do something that's going to have an effect? But then Carrick's ex-player, you know, and I'm just like, that's just because he's having some success at Middlesbrough. You know, it's like they've tried Mourinho, didn't work. Roberto Martinez, perennial failure with Belgium at major tournaments. You know, I don't know if it's someone like that, or where you go. Like, it's such a tough one.
Undoubtedly, I just feel like they're going to make a rash decision, and they're going to bring in someone like a De Zerbi. That they're just going to say, he's successful, throw money at him.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, I think, of United. It's just, it's a lack of critical thinking. And I think ultimately, had Ten Hag been able to kind of put the pieces in that he wanted and remove, like, you look at Harry Maguire, not being able to get rid of Harry Maguire. It's such a, I think after the Harry Maguire incident where he was basically sold to West Ham, he wouldn't, they should just pay him off.
Yeah.
They should just say go.
Whatever the difference in money was, just give it to him.
Mm. Just to clear the slate. Yeah. And it's something I think sometimes I don't necessarily agree with it. And sometimes I kind of think, well, look, maybe it is for the betterment. Like, one thing that you would say about Arteta is he's very good at ridding the club of kind of, not waste pieces, but maybe not great culture fits. Mm. Like, he moved off Guendouzi very quick.
Yeah.
And Guendouzi, for me, had an immense talent, has done a good job at Marseille, but he just seemed like a bad attitude character. Mm. It was like, you can be a bad attitude character, but if I try and change you and you don't adapt, then you're gone.
Yeah.
So, like, you look at maybe, say, Xhaka versus Guendouzi. Mm. And I know Guendouzi has moved on, as has Xhaka. But, yeah, I just think
there's it's probably too many bad attitude players in the whole squad. You'd nearly want a complete clear out.
You'd nearly want a complete clear out. You'd want kind of the opportunity Spurs have this season and the opportunity we had, I think, 2 years ago.
Mm.
Just no Champions League football, no European football. Focus on the league, FA Cup and League Cup.
Yeah.
And just less games, build the squad, build momentum, and let that carry on.
Build character and harmony, I suppose, or culture, as you say, mm. in the dressing room. The right culture, especially for the manager's philosophy and stuff like that. It's
exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, look, there's an element to of managing United fans' expectations.
Mm.
Maybe less so the younger ones, but more so
the older ones.
The ones who are privileged enough to support United, John Ferguson.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that we ended up talking about ownership on that one too. It seems to be a common thread. But to take things completely in the opposite direction, don't know if you've seen this. It is kind of circulating online. It's kind of gone a bit viral. It kind of tweaked my interest, and I'll reference The Athletic where I kind of read the article. And it tweaked me onto a point. So basically, a 20-year-old sports content creator who happened to strike up a friendship with Miami Dolphins receiver Tyreek Hill is no longer allowed on the sidelines during NFL games for this season and potentially for life, after Hill used his camera, basically using a phone, for a viral backflip. Is this stance quite draconian? And are the NFL missing out on massive potential impact on social media, particularly this shorter attention span, younger generation? And it kind of teased this off, maybe something we've talked about in earlier episodes of the season, about maybe how the media from the Rugby World Cup wasn't as available as we talk going into it, given the kind of TikTok sponsorship type thing. Is it a bit short-sighted from the NFL?
I think it's very short-sighted. I think if you have someone like that's promoting your product, you know, it helps their fan base, it helps the NFL fan base, and obviously in this situation Tyreek Hill's fan base. It's win-win for everyone. Like, the more accessible you can make it, and especially the likes of TikToks and Instagram Reels and stuff like that, the short bursts of highlights rather than the extended highlights and stuff that the younger fans don't want to know about. I think, yeah, it's definitely short-sightedness on their part. As you said, the world rugby made massive errors with their coverage of the World Cup. It was good on, like, the television coverage was good, but the highlights and stuff just wasn't there, and like there's so many, and we said it before, like there's so many good content creators out there for the URC Prem Rugby top 14, and they lay down their hammer and it's like, no, you can't do this.
Yeah, it just, I completely comprehend and stand behind the concept of putting full fixture behind a paywall.
Mm.
But I think it's a bit short-sighted not to see, from a business, pure business standpoint, to not see the benefit of small shortened clips to kind of wet the appetite.
Yeah, to reel people in and stuff, yeah.
It's something that always baffles me. I think there's an element of, like, not just even, I've mentioned kind of the younger generation, but even you look at maybe a, probably demographic wise, an older social media platform in Twitter, which maybe people of my age, 30s and over, probably going to utilize a lot more than, say, 19, 20 year olds. If I'm away from the couch on the sports Saturday, which happens, life happens, and I see a great goal or a great try, 110% that plants in my head, I need to go home and watch the highlights of that. Or I need to watch that game on replay.
Yeah.
And I just think it's look, maybe I'm rambling about a point that we're all in agreement, but I just think the drive, funneling traffic back into the main product through free platforms, and like with a sports content creator like that, you don't need to pay him.
Yeah.
It's just like free advertising. It's mental.
Yeah,
I think the NFL is stuffed up big time.
Yeah, and especially if they're going to ban him indefinitely, it's he'll just turn somewhere else. He'll get in the NBA or someone, you know, someone in the Miami Heat, and he'll strike up an agreement with the NBA to allow it happen, and you know, they'll benefit from it then. So someone else.
It's one thing I would say the NBA nails. Is that the access to kind of highlights and contents and monster dunks and stuff like that on this short form.
Yeah.
They absolutely nail it. Their issue, obviously, is discussed many times, just too many games. It's just games lack urgency.
Yeah.
And importance. But, yeah, look, I am going to stop the timer. It's about 10 seconds left in that one. But, yeah, it's something to tease out moving forward. Moving on, must see TV. It's a whopper kind of a weekend. We have a few fixtures here. There's arguably five other fixtures we could have thrown in here. So make sure to keep an eye on the sporting fixtures this week, whatever app you use, whether it's something like SofaScore or any of those apps. But Rockies won, and I'll just run through it quickly. Again, probably would have picked this myself if he hadn't picked it first. Sky Sports main event, 25 minutes past 9 on Sunday evening, repeat of the NFC Championship game, Eagles versus the San Francisco 49ers.
That's a mouth-watering tie.
Yeah.
For the NFL, the Irish NFL fans, that is it, and it doesn't matter which team you support, that's going to be a really good game, and looking forward to seeing that one.
And then we'll preface this by saying Monday is the 4th of December, which means it's officially a Monday in December. No one is working that hard. You can afford to stay up to 12:30 and watch that. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Chief, your fixture of the weekend.
My fixture is URC, and this time it's Connacht versus Leinster in the sports ground, Saturday, 25 to 8, and it's on RT2 or Premier Sports 1, I think. This is an interesting one with Connacht coming back from South Africa, one win out of two, now suffered a heavy loss to the Bulls at high altitude,
And as per every other Irish province that's gone there.
Yeah. They still very nearly got a 4-try bonus point though. You know, just ran out of time and bit of luck, I suppose. But yeah, it'll be interesting if the jet lag will affect them and how heavy stacked Leinster go again, whether they go like they did against Munster or if they rotate a couple of guys in. But I think it should be a good game in the sports ground.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one definitely to watch. Good to get a good few in the pros in between now and kind of over the Christmas period. The Leinster Munster game was good. I enjoyed it. And finally, my one. I just threw this in as a bit of a mulligan. There was a few more obvious ones, but I thought if you haven't any better plans on Saturday evening, Alabama face off against the Georgia Bulldogs in college football. I'm not 100% sure what channel it's going to be televised on. There's a bit of confusion with the whole Sky takeover of NCAA and kind of there's still some fixtures on TNT Sports or what was BT Sports, but 9 o'clock Irish time, I'm sure you'll find it listed somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's two kind of powerhouses of college football. Maybe Alabama's not where they've been in recent years, but I think they are on like a 10-game win streak, which shows kind of the standards they've set. Georgia, obviously reigning national championship champions, two-time, going for 3 in a row this year. So this will be a good game. If you have the opportunity, I would definitely tune in for this one.
Good, good opportunity to see some potential future stars of the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that's this week's must-see TV. Next week we'll be back for final episode of the season pre-Christmas. We'll obviously be returning in early January with season 4. But next week, I suppose, does require a bonanza to finish. I'm not quite sure what that is, but we'll come up with it during the week. And hopefully we'll blow your little cotton socks off just in time for Christmas. But that's all for me.
And that's all for me.
Thank you. And good night.